I would like to welcome you all to the meeting of the Research and Innovation Legal and Legislative Committee. Jessica, would you please call the roll?
Sure. Board Chair Dennis Barsima.
Here.
Trustee Montel Gales.
Here.
Trustee Veronica Herrero.
Here. Sorry, it took me a second.
That's okay. Trustee Bob Pritchard.
Yes.
Trustee Aiden Shields.
Here.
Trustee Eric Wazowicz.
Here.
Trustee Vice Chair John Butler.
I'm here.
Committee Chair Rita Athus.
Here. Mr. Perry, would you please verify that we have a quorum, that the appropriate notice of this meeting has been posted?
Good morning, Trustee Athus. You have a quorum present. An appropriate notification has been provided pursuant to the Illinois Open Meetings Act.
Thank you. And now may I have a motion to approve the agenda for today's meeting?
So moved, Madam Chair Montel.
That was Trustee Pritchard seconded?
Yes.
Okay, great. And Jessica, could I have a roll call vote?
Board Chair Dennis Barsima.
Yes.
Trustee Montel Gales.
Yes.
Trustee Veronica Herrero.
Yes.
Trustee Bob Pritchard.
Yes.
Trustee Aiden Shields.
Yes.
Trustee Eric Wazowicz.
Yes.
Committee Vice Chair John Butler.
Yes.
Committee Chair Rita Athus.
Yes. And now may I have a motion to approve the minutes of the May 14th, 2020 meeting?
Wazowicz, so moved.
Pritchard, second.
Jessica, could you please call the roll?
Board Chair Dennis Barsima.
Yes.
Trustee Montel Gales.
Yes.
Trustee Veronica Herrero.
Yes.
Trustee Bob Pritchard.
Yes.
Trustee Aiden Shields.
Yes.
Trustee Eric Wazowicz.
Yes.
Committee Vice Chair John Butler.
Yes.
Committee Chair Rita Athus.
Yes. Jessica, I think an extremely interesting real report. One of the things I think we'll be paying particular attention to are the reports from our state and federal liaisons, as the funds that we will receive from the state and federal government are extremely important, as we all know, with the current fiscal situation. So I know that we're very interested in hearing that. Also, you'll see from the reports on our programs that despite COVID-19, our research and innovation has continued with all these challenges to be extremely robust, and in fact has taken advantage of the opportunities that COVID provided to do new and important research. And the last thing that we'll hear about that I'm really excited about, and we all should be too, is a report that we'll hear about from the George Bush Institute. And other institutions for its innovation impact and productivity. I think that really is a credit to Dr. Blasey and his team, and I am looking forward to hearing the details of that report and for all of us to understand just how important research is to this university as we go forward. At this time, I'd like to recognize members of the University Advisory Committee representing our Research, Innovation, Legal, and Legislative Committee, and especially the three new members we have on the Advisory Committee. Do any of you have any comments for the board?
Thank you, Trustee Athus. I don't have anything to comment on beyond what I commented during the ASAP meeting, except to say, to direct your attention to the NIU Today that just came out a few moments ago. The very first article in that issue of NIU Today is on our shared governance changes. It's a nice, pithy overview of what those changes are about and why we did them. So thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments? If not, Mr. Perry, have any members of the public registered a written request to address the board in accordance with the state laws and the Board of Trustees bylaws?
Madam Chair, you have one public comment this morning, Mr. Rod Moore.
Greetings. Can everyone hear me?
Yes. Yep. Thank you.
This talk is titled The Life and Times of a Black NIU Social Change Leadership Student, Volume 2. And I'm really glad to hear all of this commitment via statements for racial equality. It's really exciting to me, and trust me, I am here to receive that promise. We have all heard of the Karen phenomenon, the phenomenon of white women that call the police on African-American men for no reason, espousing that their life is in danger. We've all seen the Amy Cooper video from New York. Many of you have seen the video from Winnetka yesterday. Now, my last undergraduate academic assignment is an academic research paper on the Karen phenomena titled The KK Project. This tells the tale of an entanglement between a Karen and a Black social change leadership student at NIU. Information about the KK Project can be seen at www.niukaren.com. And artifacts from the KK Project can be viewed at the virtual museum, www.kkmuseum.online. Now, I was retaliated against for speaking up about an injustice while engaging in my coursework. You don't have to be a social change leadership student to seek a redress for a grievance, but realize, just like a geology student might carry around a bag of rocks, a social change leadership student's coursework is learning and practicing experientially the techniques to bring about change. It is critically important to protect a student's academic freedom and the NIU Constitution, Article 9. Now to the attack. And the attack is to weaponize institutional systems via vicious lies and mistruths to attack the less powerful, which is the student. First, NIU College of Education instructor Michelle Duffy contacted multiple local police agencies telling them that I am a possible active campus shooter. She said that her life is in danger and a crazy person on medication is after her. This is the Karen phenomenon, as described by definition, calling the police on an African-American male for no reason, espousing that your life is in danger. But this is really dangerous, a possible active shooter. Board, you should all have the artifact when the bully becomes the victim, and that is what this artifact expresses. This was my response to being accused of being a possible active shooter, expressing it by saying, when the bully becomes the victim. Because NIU College of Education instructor Michelle Duffy was certainly the bully when I first encountered her. The police report discusses her yelling at the police officer. So if she talked that way to the police officer, imagine how she addressed me, the student. So I am the victim here, and she was the bully. But what the bully does is express fear to gain sympathy.
Help! Help! Help me, please! Somebody help me! The active campus shooter is after me! Help! Help!
And she did what we're all empathetic to, a woman calling for help. The damsel in distress, pointing at the dangerous Black man. That's the same energy that got Emmett Till killed, weaponizing whiteness, engaging in a vicious, lying attack on the Black man with no concern for the consequences of those actions. We all know what happened in Emmett Till's case. Next, NIU College of Education instructor Michelle Duffy filed false reports against me to NIU student conduct. These allegations were dismissed and labeled as, quote, total bullshit and racism, end quote, from a current university director. NIU College of Education instructor inserted race herself, labeling NIU Department of Public Safety officer Junelle Bennett as, quote, the African-American officer, end quote, disparaging her in a letter to President Freeman saying that she wasn't trained while expressing fear to gain sympathy and support. But it's all made up. It's a lie. It's fugazi. It's a retaliatory attack for a College of Education Student Advisory Committee member speaking with his dean about student experiences within the college. A student speaking to his own dean. Along with statements of commitment to Black students and racial equality, you must address what happens inside of your own building, providing redress to the victims of vicious, retaliatory, racial attacks such as this. But wait, there's more. The worst part of the attack is yet to come. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moyer. Appreciate your comments. At this point, I'd like to ask Vice President Innovation Policy for new items and comments and to go over the university report.
Thank you, Chair Athas. You broke up a bit, but I think you were asking me to make a few comments.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, thank you again and greetings to the full committee. I'll make just a few brief comments this morning. As was said earlier, despite the many challenges presented by the pandemic, our faculty continue with their excellent scholarship and innovation, and our staff continue to provide outstanding support. And I just like to get that out front and center, the fact that people have managed to continue with their scholarship during this difficult time. This spring and early summer, we put together a program for reopening scholarly spaces and facilities, and I'm happy to report that all our facilities and spaces did reopen smoothly and safely, and by June 1st, we had done so for more than 100 different locations. I'd like to thank the staff at RIPS for quickly putting together an online process for doing so, and the faculty for their diligent participation to ensure we got up and running again in a very, very safe way. Furthermore, as you'll hear a little bit later on in the presentations this morning, the faculty have been responding to the research possibilities of COVID-19, seeing it as an opportunity as well as a difficulty. We have four information items today. The legislative arena has been tumultuous, to say the least. And State Legislative Liaison Jenna Mitchell and Assistant Vice President Anna Quieter will give you the latest update on the state and federal events. I would like to say that their advocacy efforts have been visible and quite effective, and I would like to thank them both for their efforts. So despite the challenges we faced this spring and summer, FY 2019 was a very good year for scholarship and innovation. I've been guilty of stealing people's thunder in the past at these committee meetings. So this year, I'll let Assistant Vice President Little and Director Sebi share the great news. I will say that the great progress we've made is a testament to the perseverance and dedication of our faculty and staff. So Jenna, if you would you like to address item 7A?
Yes, thank you, Jerry. Good morning, everyone. It's great to see you all virtually. As Dr. Blasey mentioned, government relations at both the state and the federal level have been quite hectic and nonstop over the last several months as we continue to seek guidance and implement varying regulations in response to COVID-19. I'd first like to thank Dr. Streb for his leadership and assistance with state relations over the past few months. And secondly, I'd like to recognize the leadership and partnership of Dr. Quieter. The response to COVID-19 has provided significant overlap in terms of state and federal relations. Dr. Quieter has not only been working very closely with me to ensure that I understand all of the moving parts at the federal level, but she has also taken the lead in briefing other Illinois universities on what's happening in Washington, setting up meetings with different congressional delegation members, and her partnership has been pivotal in our understanding of what needs to be relayed to Illinois lawmakers. When we last spoke in the middle of May, the General Assembly was getting ready to head back to Springfield to take care of time-sensitive items, and there remained great uncertainty as to what their actions would include. At the end of May, lawmakers gathered in Springfield for a total of 4 days and ended up passing a budget, among other items, just in time for the close of the state's fiscal year. NIU received a flat appropriation level at $87.8 million, This was welcome news, as we had been hearing from negotiations that cuts ranging from 5% to 35% were on the table at varying points. While a flat appropriation is certainly welcome and provides the bare minimum stability, we are not out of the woods in terms of uncertainty. The budget passed does rely on strong revenues in FY21, and we may see budget adjustments following the November election, depending on the voters' approval of a new tax structure for Illinois. The budget also included flat appropriations for the Monetary Award Program and AIM High Scholarship Program. We do not yet know what NIU's allocation of the AIM High dollars will be for year three of the program. However, Rebecca Babel and I received a request from ISAC yesterday for the student data that's necessary for them to begin calculating each institution's allocation of the $35 million for the next year of the program. The budget also included a fix to the FY20 AIM High appropriation, removing the cohort restrictions that tied our hands in terms of expenditure flexibility. I think we've discussed this in my last four reports to the board. We've been advocating for this change and adjustment for over a year, and it came just in time to provide us with the necessary autonomy to spend our $3.8 million total allocation on any existing or future cohorts for year two of the program, which is beginning this fall semester. While in Springfield, the General Assembly also passed an education COVID omnibus bill, which included a few changes to higher education statutes. Notably, lawmakers statutorily created an emergency completion and student support services grant program. This program is one that NIU and the Partnership for College Completion took the lead on advocating for early in 2020. And while there has not yet been an appropriation made to implement the program, this should be considered a legislative win, as the statutory change sets great precedent in our push for funding in future fiscal years. In my last report to the board, I noted that NIU was still owed a significant portion of its FY20 appropriation. I'm happy to report today that as of July 29th, we've been made whole for the prior fiscal year, receiving our $87.8 million appropriation in full. I'm also happy to report that as of this morning, NIU has already received approximately $8.1 million of its FY21 appropriation from the state. This equates to roughly 10% of the total funding that we expect to receive this year based on current appropriation levels. This is relatively consistent, from what I understand, with the timeline of receipts in prior years, which is promising news considering the state's general revenue uncertainties have been amplified by COVID-19 impacts. While NIU's receipt of general operating funds from the state have not yet been impacted by revenue or shortfalls, capital funding has been. The FY21 budget did include reappropriation of all capital projects, authorizing expenditure this year. However, many of those projects remain in a holding pattern due to COVID-19, particularly because of the specific tax revenue sources necessary to pay for the projects. The $7.7 million released and authorized for expenditure on the planning and design of the new health IT building has not yet been received. The $15 million for the Northern Illinois Center for Community Sustainability, NICS, is in the same exact situation. And additionally, the $53 million for deferred maintenance has not yet been authorized for release, and the impact of the pandemic only adds to existing uncertainties regarding when the funds might move forward in the process. Getting capital dollars released is a top priority for state relations this year. At the end of July, the Board of Higher Education released its COVID-19 guidance for safely launching academic year 2020. This guidance was constructed in collaboration with presidents, faculty, staff, and public health experts from some of Illinois' public and private institutions. President Freeman was asked to serve on the committee, making NIU one of the four public universities to have direct representation. Implementation of statewide guidelines, including CDC and IDPH safety guidelines, is currently a leading factor in terms of added costs to the university. Not only are there direct costs associated with physical spacing and increased cleaning and sanitation efforts, but there are also related technology costs associated, as we have seen an emergence of varying needs as we implement physical spacing and a hybrid course structure. The most significant outstanding issue in terms of action needed by leaders at the state and/or federal level is limited liability protections. NIU and its sister institutions have been in regular contact with the governor's office and IBHE to discuss these needs, and we are hopeful that more constructive conversations will take place over the coming weeks. As you may recall, NIU has been anticipating the announcement of the allocation that it would be receiving from the governor's Education Relief Fund created by the Federal CARES Act. Illinois received a total of $108 million for this grant. To date, we've been notified that NIU has been allocated $2.9 million from the total $48 million going to higher education. This is the second largest allocation amount being received by any Illinois institution, second to only University of Illinois at Chicago. In addition to the $2.9 million allocation, as of just this morning, NIU has submitted a competitive proposal to receive an additional $500,000 to support programs targeting enrollment and retention of underrepresented, first-generation, and high-need students most adversely impacted by COVID-19. Lastly, as there is much uncertainty regarding what is in store for future legislative sessions and action in Springfield in normal times, you can only imagine how uncertain things are now that there's a pandemic in play and a referendum on the ballot that will significantly dictate state budgetary actions in the coming months. The General Assembly is currently scheduled to reconvene for 2 weeks at the end of November and the beginning of December. And as the next few months unfold, we'll see if this comes to fruition, if they're able to meet in person, and also get a better understanding of what's on lawmakers' agenda. At this time, I'm happy to yield for any questions that members of the committee might have.
Thanks, Jenna. And first, I have to welcome you back, congratulate you on the baby, and say that you don't look very sleep deprived. So obviously, things are going very well.
Thank you.
Thank you for your report. The couple of things I wanted to point out, first of all, is Dr. Friedman being on the committee with the CDC just shows again how under our leadership, NIU is in position like the leadership team here on all of that. Also with the grant funding, we're very much on top of things. And that again is a good team. The fact that we got only second to UIC, the amount of grant funding we did from that specific program is certainly commendable. Jen, I know the situation in Springfield, challenging to say the least. And I was really pleased when you said that we have received our funding from last year and a portion of our funding from this year for operating. I am concerned about the capital money and the fact that we haven't received that, and there doesn't seem to be a verbally received. Are there discussions ongoing about that?
I'm sorry, you broke up a little bit at the end there, but I think if I understood the question correctly, you're wondering if there are ongoing conversations regarding capital. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah. That's the thing. There doesn't seem to be any movement on that as opposed to the operating?
Yeah, and I think there may be more information during the FACFO committee on where we are at in terms of all of our varying capital projects. However, we are in contact with the Capital Development Board and the Governor's Office, as well as lawmakers, to really push for the capital program to move forward. In so many ways, hands are very tied simply because the revenues that are necessary to pay for these programs just isn't coming in. It doesn't exist. And we're competing with the Department of Transportation for the roads, all of the legislative districts that have all of their projects for their villages and their communities, the K-12 schools, and it's, you know, money is not going out the door for any sector. So we continue to advocate to be first in line to address critical deferred maintenance needs on our campus and to be able to begin these projects that really will revitalize all of our campuses and institutions. And we're kind of just in a holding pattern waiting for that revenue, but the expression of the need is ongoing and very consistent.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions for Jenna on the state report? Hearing none, will Dr. Blasey, do you want to move on to the federal report?
Hello, can you hear me?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Okay, great. Shall I begin?
Yes, Dr. Quieter, please begin.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, and thank you for the opportunity to call into your meeting today. Today, I'll provide a brief update on current federal relations issues, drawing from the quarterly report, as well as from recent events. First, I'd like to start, though, by thanking Director Mitchell for her generous statement, opening statement, and extend the same respect and gratitude to her for her leadership and partnership during this challenging time. And I'll lead off with legislative efforts to continue to address the COVID-19 pandemic. As a quick recap, back in March, the Families First Coronavirus Response Act and the CARES Act were signed into law. From the CARES Act, NIU received an allocation of $14.8 million to be spent equally between direct emergency grants to students and institutional expenses related to the pandemic, as Vice President Dara Little will note in the SPA report. Those funds are all spent or committed at this point. Where we are today is that there is broad agreement among the House, the Senate, and the White House that additional pandemic relief is needed, but negotiations have stalled. No progress is expected until after Labor Day. The negotiations are expected to become more complicated as we enter September because funding for fiscal year 2021 needs to be addressed before October 1st, and emergency funding for the U.S. Postal Service is now in the mix. Those pieces could become part of the pandemic relief bill negotiations. And the backdrop of the November elections also adds to the complexity. The House, the Senate, and the White House are far apart on both funding and policy for pandemic relief. The House starting point is the HEROES Act, which passed the House in May. The HEROES Act would cost an estimated $3 trillion, and NIU would receive an estimated allocation of $43 million from the bill. The Senate starting point is the HEALS Act, which was introduced in July. The HEALS Act would cost an estimated $1 trillion, and NIU would receive an estimated allocation of $34 million from the bill. There are favorable, unique policy provisions in each bill. For example, the HEROES Act makes public universities eligible for paid leave tax credits and the employee retention credit, which both became law back in March. And it includes over $800 billion in aid to state and local governments, of which Illinois is estimated to receive over $18 billion. And it includes a strong maintenance of effort provision for state support of public higher education for states that accept the federal aid under the bill. In contrast, the HEALS Act provides temporary coronavirus-related liability protections for public universities. So given the stalled negotiations, on August 8th, President Trump approved four executive actions relating to pandemic relief, including directing the Department of Education to extend student loan relief granted under the CARES Act until the end of this calendar year. Ultimately, the White House is limited in the unilateral actions at its disposal, and an agreement with Congress is needed for the nation. The Office of Federal Relations is working in close coordination with state relations and other units across campus and with public universities across Illinois and the nation to assess the impact of proposed policies and make the case for additional financial and policy relief from pandemic-related impacts. For example, since May, President Freeman has discussed this issue with Senator Durbin, Senator Duckworth, Representative Kinzinger, Representative Lipinski, and Representative Underwood, and she has joined with Illinois Public University presidents in sending two letters to the Illinois Congressional Delegation. Faculty Senate President Kendall Thu, who I've seen is here today, and Student Government Association leaders have also sent letters to the Illinois Congressional Delegation regarding the impact of the pandemic on their constituents and the need for federally supported relief. We have had the support of our congressional delegation, especially Congressman Lipinski, who is leading bipartisan efforts in the House for $47 billion in higher education specific relief. So switching from pandemic relief, I'll touch briefly on appropriations. As I mentioned, fiscal year 2021 begins on October 1st. A continuing resolution that funds the government at last year's level through at least mid-November is expected, and a government shutdown at this point is looking very unlikely. The House has made a lot of progress in passing appropriations bills, and their bills provide year-on-year increases for NIU priorities in education, research, and student financial aid, and that's a good starting point for eventual negotiations with the Senate and the White House. And depending on the outcome of the November elections, it could be early to mid-2021, until we see fiscal year 21 appropriations completed. For example, after President Trump's election in 2016, fiscal year 2017 appropriations were not completed until May of 2017, which was 9 months into the fiscal year. Turning to the administration, there's been a lot of activity in the immigration space, as outlined in the report. In the interest of time, I won't go through all of the changes, but I assure you that the Office of Federal Relations is working closely with the Division of International Affairs on assessing the updated policies as they arise and engaging federal policymakers as appropriate. As detailed in the report, there is strong bipartisan support in the Illinois Congressional Delegation for international students and scholars. Turning to the Supreme Court, there were two major rulings this quarter. The court rejected the Trump administration's termination of the DACA program, so the policy remains in place for the time being. The court also ruled that Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 protects gay and transgender individuals from workplace discrimination. And finally, typically in the August report, I do an overview of the past year's activities for the Office of Federal Relations, and you can see the details of the facts and figures of that in the report. I'd like to share with you one illustrative example that demonstrates the impact of the meetings and engagements that are tallied in the annual summary. Presidential Research Professor Tao Zhu of the Department of Chemistry and Biochemistry was invited by Congressman Adam Kinzinger to represent his district at the Energy and Environment Innovation Showcase on Capitol Hill in December of 2019. 14 states were represented by 18 presenters spanning industry, the military, and academia at the reception. While in town, Professor Zhu met with program managers from the Department of Energy, ARPA-E, and the National Science Foundation. Director Luksebi will say a bit more about Professor Zhu's work today, but I'm pleased to share with you that Professor Zhu attributes the meetings he had in Washington, D.C. with shaping the research direction which led to his latest Nature Energy publication. Thank you for your time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Dr. Quider. Like Director Mitchell, you two both do extremely comprehensive reports and appreciate that. I think Trustee Barsima has a question.
Dennis, you may be on mute.
There you go. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair Athos. Good to see you, Anna, and thank you for your report. I actually have a question for you, and then if Jenna is on the line still or on the call still, I have a question for her as well. But first, from a federal standpoint, so the next act that gets approved, you know, in terms of support from the federal standpoint, regardless of which one goes through, is there a risk as we get closer to the November election, is there a risk that this could get tabled until after the election? What are your thoughts there?
You know, I think that, I think that there is a risk. I mean, these negotiations have been even more politicized than normal, I would say. And so I think that there is a risk that they could be tabled. But right now, what I'm hearing is that there is still energy and appetite on both sides to get something done. So I think you'll see Speaker Pelosi and Minority Leader Schumer are in regular contact with Secretary Mnuchin and others in the negotiations. So I think as long as there, and in fact, just yesterday, the Senate Republicans released a scaled back version of the HEALS Act as trying to negotiate, you know, creating a skinny package, as they called it. So I think that we'll continue to see those types of efforts. And as you allude to, public opinion is such an important piece of these negotiations. And I think that the American people want to see something done before November. You know, mm-hmm. And I think that as long as that remains the case, I think that there's going to continue to be pressure within the House rank and file and within the Senate for something to get done.
Okay. Thank you. Can I ask a question of Jenna, if she's still on the line?
I'm here.
Okay. You had, and I agree with you. You had mentioned that, you know, perhaps state appropriations for current fiscal year would be impacted in a negative way if the on the November ballot, if the new law or the change to the state constitution relative to, you know, the income tax rate doesn't go through. What are you hearing in Springfield in terms of what they're thinking on what the voters are going to do in November relative to the new state tax change?
I don't think anyone knows exactly what will happen in November, where that will go. I'm sure there's polling somewhere. I can try and put a feeler out and get back to you. But there were provisions put into the FY21 budget implementation that does allow for adjustment, executive adjustment to the budget following what the voters decide in November. So I feel like, you know, I've said the word uncertainty about 75 times this morning. There really just is so much uncertainty. We're just waiting to see how it all unfolds.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Sorry, that's not much of an answer.
Oh, no, I was just wondering if there was any, you know, any rumors or word on the street as to what the lawmakers were thinking the voters were going to do in November. I guess we'll find out in 70 days or so, whenever that.
And then it should help us be more clear what actions need to be taken or don't need to be taken following that vote.
Right. Thank you both very much. We appreciate your work and your efforts. And more than that, we appreciate your results. So thanks very much.
Thank you. I would like to second that. And are there any additional questions for either Director Mitchell or Dr. Quieter? Again, appreciate what you're doing in an extremely the crisis upended almost every part of our society, and appreciate the hard work that you're putting in. Thank you.
Thank you. Now we're going to move to the sponsored program report by Daryl Little.
Good morning. So I did prepare slides. Do we have those available? Otherwise, I'll pivot to the written report, I guess.
Dara, yes, Cindy should be able to put those up. Hold on 1 second.
I think you're on mute, Eric, if you're trying to talk.
Jerry, is that you on the top of the mountain?
No, I'm in the cirque. Just
we did discover, Jerry, with these backgrounds, that if you get up and kind of walk away from it, you'll actually walk into the mountain. It's pretty cool.
Oh, I'd like to see that.
Wait a minute. Are you saying I've been busted?
There you go.
That's the Office of Innovation, so I don't want to steal my colleague Luke's thunder. Do you have one for sponsored programs? If not, I can wing it and can share the slides later.
Let's give it a moment.
Hey, Jerry, I think I might be around the block from you if you look at my picture.
Yeah.
Dara, why don't you go ahead? We'll fix it on the back end and she'll get them up there.
Oh, there it is.
Oh, yay.
It's on.
Good. Now we get to see the good news in large format.
Excellent. All right. Well, I will jump right in. And say thank you, of course, for the opportunity to present briefly this last year's external funding activity and to share information that's been compiled by my team in Sponsored Programs Administration. As you've heard, I do have a lot of good news to share with you this morning. And after the presentation, I'm happy to answer any questions that you have. Next slide, please. So you can see here that even amidst a year of great uncertainty, excited to report that it was another good year for external funding at NIU. We continue to see consistent growth since fiscal year 2017, and NIU is at its highest level of external funding in 5 years. The yellow line on the bar chart for this year shows the $7.4 million in Federal CARES institutional funding that was received by NIU and that was managed through sponsored programs and in careful coordination with the Division of Finance and the Controller's Office. While that certainly contributed to this year's increase, you can see that even absent CARES, NIU would have been up slightly over past years. The general makeup of awards between research, instruction, and other activities, which is basically everything other than research and instruction, is consistent. Next slide. The information in this slide is intended to show at a really high level the basic throughput through SPA for sponsored funding in terms of number of proposal submissions and number of awards received. You can see that the $44 million in funding that we received this year was received through 325 awards. Contributing to the uptick in awards from last year is more diligent reporting of faculty and college activity between SPA and the college dean's offices. You can also see that NIU has experienced an uptick in the number of proposals submitted through SPA. Of the 383 proposals submitted this year, 13 have been for specific COVID relief or research, and we expect to see additional proposals for COVID research as the federal and state governments release their aid funds and agencies prioritize their research funds. And actually, I should mention that we have now submitted 14 proposals. The one that Jenna just mentioned in her talk that was submitted this morning to the Governor's Emergency Relief Fund did go through. So we have now submitted 14 proposals for COVID relief and research. Of the proposals that were submitted this fiscal year, a third of those have been funded and half of those are still pending with the sponsor. Next slide, please. Consistent with previous years, the federal government continues to provide the majority of NIU-sponsored revenue. This funding is either received directly from the federal agency or through another entity, such as another university or a state agency. This composition of funding in having the federal government be the primary funder is consistent for higher education and sponsored funding. We do anticipate growth over the next few years in the corporate and public nonprofit revenue sources as the Office of Innovation's work takes hold and we expand partnerships and build out the PhD programs as well as NICS. Next slide. So this slide breaks that funding down a little bit more for you by the top 10 federal agencies. Out of the $33 million in total funding that we've received, you can see here on the bar chart that Department of Health and Human Services accounts for almost a third of that. Almost all of that funding comes through to NIU through State of Illinois agencies, which is why that bar shows most of the funding as flow through. Part of that is because there's been a shift in classification and how the state identifies federal funding in their contracts. The remainder of those DHHS funds is mostly research funding through the Department of or National Institutes of Health. The second bar, the Department of Education, again, that includes the $7.4 million in CARES funding. And the third bar is worth mentioning as well, that is Department of Energy. And I'll just let you know that over half of those funds are received through Argonne and Fermilab, again, emphasizing the significance of our partnerships with those labs. Next slide. The majority of NIU's external funding this year continues to be concentrated in the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences and outreach engagement and regional development, with Liberal Arts and Sciences receiving $18.5 million and Outreach $8.2 million. This is again consistent with NIU's portfolio. However, I will say that given the PhD programs that are coming online in the College of Engineering, that I would expect to see their funding grow over the coming years as well. Again, the $7.5 million for other university units, that is almost entirely the CARES funding that I've mentioned. Next slide, please. So I would be remiss if I didn't get through this presentation without highlighting some of the COVID research and work that's underway at NIU. I know this is something that everybody does want to hear about. Amidst all of the changes this past spring, faculty members from across the university departments pivoted aspects of their research to the COVID-19 pandemic. And the scopes of that work is extremely varied. While not on the slides, in the College of Health and Human Sciences, Dr. Paul Priester is looking at how 12-step recovery communities have navigated social distancing with recovery maintenance. In the College of Education, Dr. Laura Johnson is training future education researchers on how to develop research-based instructional strategies to keep high school students from vulnerable and underserved populations engaged during remote learning. I don't have time to present on all of the COVID research and the work that our faculty are doing, but my SPA team has had a chance to work closely with some of the faculty already to help them secure funding for their work. And so I would like to mention three of these COVID projects briefly. One project has already been funded and the other two are still pending with the sponsor. To the top left is Dr. Sashit Patel, assistant professor in mechanical engineering. He recently won a National Science Foundation Rapid Award to create a new modeling framework that will provide real-time predictions of the COVID-19 outbreak in the US using various what-if scenarios. The rapid response research or rapid mechanism allows NSF to receive and review proposals more quickly than normal in order to expedite research for unanticipated natural or other events, such as a global pandemic. It's worth noting here that the bar for rapid awards in general is pretty high. The bar for getting funded for COVID research through the rapid mechanism was especially high. So obtaining this funding was a huge accomplishment for Dr. Patel. To the right is Dr. Lishuan Liu in electrical engineering and Dr. Tao Zhu in chemistry and biochemistry. They've teamed up with a company to submit a proposal to the NSF Small Business and Innovation Research Program to conduct some health monitoring for COVID. I decided I probably shouldn't go into detail too much about what they're doing because I'm not sure if we have NDAs on file, so I don't want to share their work too much in public. That proposal is still pending, but the work definitely represents the type of cross-disciplinary research that's often needed to address these very complex real-world problems and how researchers can partner with small businesses to move that research to market more quickly. This is another great example of the work that the Office of Innovation has been doing. They facilitated part of this partnership and their team worked with my team in SPA to submit the proposal. And then finally at the bottom is Dr. Catherine Ramon, Director of NIU Center for Burma Studies and Professor of Art History. She led the submission of a proposal to the Institute of Museum and Library Services to address evolving challenges faced by our rare Burma art collection during COVID-19, as well as to develop a safe online presence to support longstanding collaborations within the Burmese refugee community. So I would just like to say that SPA extends our congratulations to all faculty who have received funding this past year, and we greatly appreciate the effort of everybody who submitted proposals and who adjusted their research to respond to the pandemic. Especially during such a challenging time and an uncertain time, while many were also trying to keep their research going, submit new proposals, all while also pivoting to remote teaching. Next slide. So in summary, total sponsored funding for fiscal year 20 was $44 million, and I use highest level of funding in 5 years. Of this funding, $7.5 million is COVID-related. Even without COVID funding, NIU has seen consistent growth in external funding since 2017. The COVID-19 pandemic did not slow principal investigators' efforts to secure external funding, nor did we see a significant slowdown in work. While the infusion of CARES funding and other COVID awards brings welcome relief to the university and opportunities to support new research and programs, it does add to the complexity of our sponsored funding portfolio for SPA, as well as the university to manage, that will be the subject of heightened scrutiny for years to come. This really does reinforce the need to make sure that we have strong policies and procedures and systems in place to make sure that we can ensure compliance with these funds, but equally important that we do so without impeding faculty research or creating barriers to the work that the Office of Innovation and other groups across campus are doing. My office has been working very closely with other university units, such as finance and HR, to better understand the compliance requirements and to improve our processes. And I appreciate their collaboration over the past year, and I look forward to continuing our work together. One thing that, you know, is certainly clear, all of these sponsored funding policies relies on every other unit in order to be effective. So it is important that we continue to come together and to work across units. And next slide. So before I open it up for questions, I just want to take a quick minute to recognize my team in SPA for all of their hard work over this past year, and especially the past 6 months. Like everybody else, they have had to quickly pivot to remote work, and they really did that with ease. But they are really the ones who are on the front lines working with faculty and the other university units to get all of the work done so that I can report these numbers to you today. Without a doubt, they are one of the most committed groups of people that I've ever worked with. They've taken on new types of work. They have jumped in to cover staffing shortages, and I can assure you that they always do so with a commitment to what's best for NIU. I would also like to thank Vice President Blasey for his ongoing support as we work through all of this during a very uncertain time and what's a new normal. And lastly, because of the staff's hard work, we were able to finish our SPA annual report before this board meeting. We've never actually done that before. It's not a small feat because the meeting is so close to fiscal year end. So there is additional information about FY20 funding in this report. It's available on the SPA website, and the link is on the slide, and I will make sure that the board has access to that report as well. With that, I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you, dear. Really appreciate that report, and congratulations to you and the staff. It is so nice, especially in these times, to get good news, and appreciate all the work you've done. I don't know if you've already done this or if it can't be done, but looking at this, is there a way to place the different projects in broad categories, for example, climate change or energy or health? And is that over time? I can see where the areas of expertise are the strongest at Northern, and if that has changed over the last few years. And I don't know how difficult that is.
To look at that change over time might be a little difficult, mm-hmm. but while I won't get into specifics, I do have one idea of how we might be able to do that, but it would be specific to federally funded projects. I think there's a data set that we would be able to access pretty quickly to get that information, which might be a start. I would need to talk with the team and with Vice President Blasey to figure out how we would kind of collect that data in order to report it more broadly.
So I'd like to make a comment, if I may. First of all, Dara, that was a fantastic talk. Thank mm-hmm. you very much. Second, if you look at the report that Dara has mentioned, the data is disaggregated by college and by department. Mm-hmm. And I think that just that would give you a sense, at least by discipline, of where we have our strongest programs and where we have ongoing success. But I agree, we can provide you some time perspective as a function of time. But just looking at that disaggregated data will help you see much, give you some insight into your questions.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. And I think we have a question from Trustee Wasowick.
Thank you, Rita. Dara, again, great report. Thank you very much for being so comprehensive. I noticed, although it's very small, $43,000 coming from a foreign source. Just kind of curious, who is seeing us as being that great to give us $43,000?
I believe that is an education training project through the College of Education. I don't have any more specifics on that, but it is instructional related.
Okay. I mean, it might be an opportunity to build on that, I guess. So anyway, thank you.
Yep. Trustee Pritchard, I believe you have a question. Trustee Pritchard, is your mic on?
Well, it was. Well, congratulations again, Dara. And I wanted to follow up on Eric's comment about education funding. I see that we've expanded our state report card. Could you comment on that?
Not in great detail, other than to say that NIU has a very long history with ISBE for developing and maintaining the Illinois report card. I know that school districts across the state use that and rely on that data heavily for their operations. So if there was an increase that you're seeing, it probably has to do with the way that the state releases the funding for that program. So it varies kind of every other year and how they let that contract go.
Yeah. We can certainly be proud of that contract. I know over the years, Northern has kind of taken the lead in not only this area of report cards, but in how we're making sure that state funds are being used properly. Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you. And I think there's a question from Trustee Gales.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Great presentation. Great presentation. Wanted to ask about the COVID proposals. You said that we still had some outstanding proposals out there. How many of those, the COVID proposals, were accepted? Do we still have a population that has not been accounted for?
There was a table in my written report that had the current status as of the writing of that report. So the NSF that I mentioned was funded. We have, we received an award for relief funds for Northern Public Radio, and then of course the CARES funding. So those are the three awards that I am aware of that are COVID specific.
Is it possible that we're gonna get additional awards, so they just filter in a little bit later?
Yes, so that's partly just the nature of agency review cycles. So most of these proposals have been submitted just within the last few months. So it can take anywhere from 3 to 6 months, if not more, for an agency to review them. So, you know, it's not uncommon that they would still be pending at this time. We do know that we will have a few more awards coming in. The proposal I mentioned this morning that just went to the state of Illinois for the GEAR funding, that, of course, will be coming through soon as an award. That's kind of the status of where it's at now. And I anticipate that we will have more proposals submitted for COVID research. Again, as agencies kind of redefine their research priorities to address the pandemic, and we learn what faculty, you know, we know a lot of faculty are doing work in this space. They maybe just haven't been in touch with SPI yet about submitting a proposal.
Hey, I may be sharing some of my ignorance on this process, but are these proposals all home-based, or do we have some sort of collaborative effort with other universities or other institutions?
That's a great question. I can't tell you for all of the proposals whether or not they're collaborative, but I can tell you that Dr. Battales is a collaborative with NYU, New York University.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any additional questions? If not, Dara, thank you very much. As I said in my initial comments and as the trustees echoed, it was a great report and really appreciate all the work you and the team do. Thank you very much.
Chair Athens, can I make a comment? This is all about sponsored funding. I just want to say that there's a heck of a lot of research going on that's not getting external funded. It's individuals and faculty members that are working on their own time with their own resources, particularly in psychology and education, because they're trying to understand the impacts and trying to mitigate the impact. So this is a fraction of the research that's going on. We tend to focus on sponsored funding because it's objective and measurable, but there is a lot of other research going on that we just don't have time to mention.
Thank you, Dr. Blasey. I think you and I have talked, I don't think I know that I didn't completely understand the scope of research that was going on at Northern, or we can get that out. I think the we will be for attracting both students and faculty, and you're all to be commended for that. I'm so impressed just being part of this for a short time, so I'm sure others would too.
Okay.
All right, we're going to move to information item 7C. Oh, no, I'm sorry, 7D. Innovation impact plan. Abby's going to give the report.
Okay, good morning, everyone. I'm Luke Sebi. I'm the Director of Innovation Partnerships and Technology Transfer. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, thank you so much.
Welcome.
So first, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to present key details from our Office of Innovation FY20 report. For context, I'd like to start, though, by introducing my teammates who have really contributed heavily over the years. And first and foremost is Corinne Bredberg, the Assistant Director for Innovation, who focuses on forging innovation partnerships. Now, Corinne's dedication and service in the Office of Innovation over the years directly contributed to the outcomes of the recent Innovation Impact Report that we'll be discussing later. Next, my colleague Mark Hankins, he's the Assistant Director for Tech Transfer. He's an intellectual property lawyer by training, and he focuses on managing our IP portfolio. And then Chef Brian Flower, our Assistant Director for Food Systems Innovation, focuses on strategy and planning for NICS Food Systems Innovation. Now, by way of overview for my presentation, I'm going to start by key metrics from our IP portfolio, and then I'll provide some observations and reflection on the George W. Bush Institute Innovation Impact Study that we circulated recently. And I'll conclude with an overview of our FY20 Office of Innovation activities with a look at what we're going to be doing for FY21. Next slide, please. So let me first discuss a few of our IP portfolio metrics. This is really a snapshot in time. We have currently 46 active cases, and active cases are basically cases related to a single technology. Now there might be multiple patent applications or patents issued from a single active case. We have 39 US and 18 foreign patents currently we hold in our portfolio. And just for a sense of context, the patent breakdown is a little over half chemistry and biochemistry related. And then a little slightly under a third of them are mechanical and electrical engineering related, and about 10% or so are in physics. The rest are a smattering across the board. Now we have two active licensing agreements, we have two option agreements in force, and we have one trademark that's been issued in easy machining of hard materials. In FY20, we saw three new invention disclosures, which we're excited about. Next slide, please. Okay, let me comment for a few minutes on this Innovation Impact Report that was produced by the George W. Bush Institute, Opus Favio Innovation Development, and Southern Methodist Universities. I'd first like to thank Trustee Pritchard for his questions on the report. We appreciate those. Now, the report measured innovation across the university ecosystem on 9 factors. These factors were new patents issued, new license agreements, licensing income, spin-out companies, licenses to spinouts, academic paper citations, patent citations, new STEM doctoral graduates, new STEM bachelor's and master's graduates, and the study covered the period of 2013 to 2017. Now, we're particularly excited about this study, of course, because NIU ranked third amongst peer institutions. And in terms of peers, NIU ranks with those under 100 million in total research expenditures without a medical school. Now, there are a number of recommendations that came from the report on how universities can work to improve their impact. Now, these recommendations range from prioritization of research to instilling a culture of innovation and entrepreneurship throughout the university, to engaging closely with the local surrounding businesses and innovation communities. I'd like to provide a little bit of context for how NIU achieved the rank of third in its place. Largely, I would say this is a story of efficiency. There was a heavy reliance on the research and teaching productivity across our ecosystem. In terms of publications, in terms of patents, in terms of the citations on both, and largely in terms of our total volume of STEM graduates. This, coupled with prudent technology transfer office patent prosecution decisions, led to our place of third. Now, all that's to say there's more to be done, particularly from the perspective of my office, we have work to do. And in particular, we're going to be focusing on those lagging indicators in commercialization, particularly those that my office can influence, such as new licensing agreements, licensing outcome, spin-out opportunities, and local community partnership engagement and development. Focusing on these, in addition to what the research and pedagogical efforts are already doing, we can further boost our overall innovation impact. And the work that we're engaging in now currently addresses this, so I'll turn to that next. Next slide, please. Let me spend a minute or two on what we've been engaging in for FY20. When I joined the office, we began an innovation inventory, and we spent time diving into the research ecosystem, the intellectual property, the infrastructure, the internal and external stakeholders that we have, all to better understand what the component pieces of our innovation ecosystem represent and what the innovation potential of the NIU ecosystem could be, identifying both strengths and potential weaknesses. We spent time prioritizing and streamlining innovation office activities and efforts. In particular, we did an IP portfolio review that resulted in the binning of our intellectual property broadly into about three categories. These represent those categories that have commercial activity, those cases that have commercial potential, and those cases we view as little or no potential. Now, this helps prioritize where we spend our time in terms of marketing research, in terms of partnership engagement and development, and in terms of where we place additional investment. We also conducted a research portfolio review to better understand funding streams. I did this in concert with my colleague, Dara. Looking closely at who funds NIU efforts and who doesn't, we noted that there were many potential opportunities, especially as the US government engages in innovation in different corners. In particular, with my background, I noted that the DoD represented a very small investment in terms of our innovation ecosystem. And so that presents an opportunity potentially for engagement, particularly in areas of innovation that benefit society as a whole. We also conducted an internal process review to identify opportunities for additional efficiencies, places that we can implement best practices. Next, we've been undertaking a data-driven approach to partnering. Now, we began an initial analysis of potential industry partners for innovation. We've been crosswalking this initial analysis with other stakeholders, internal, across campus community, to deconflict and to understand and ensure that whenever we go for an innovation partnership opportunity, we're pitching a whole of ecosystem approach. We've begun to build a commercialization framework and strategy with a focus on how NIU might create the conditions to inspire innovation and entrepreneurial activities in a more robust manner among students and faculty. We'd like to create the conditions for more spin-out opportunities and create the conditions to incubate those spin-outs here in DeKalb area and across campus to ensure their successful launch and growth. So we're working very closely with partners on this. We'll be working with colleagues across the different colleges to co-create and implement programming required. Now, we're also investigating opportunities for student and faculty engagement. This really focuses on creating that culture of innovation that the report describes as so necessary. Here we're thinking about talks by local entrepreneurs, launching innovation challenge activities for students, hackathons, pitch sessions, largely on an existing intellectual property or prototypes that are coming out of the colleges to develop business cases. reviewing 71 North as a launch pad for these endeavors. Some current examples are we're working on an innovation challenge for students in collaboration with a local entrepreneur that will hopefully kick off later this fall. And we're also actively working on opportunities for faculty to engage broader innovation ecosystems, such as the invite I obtained for Dr. Tao Zhu this week to attend a 3-day Air Force Innovation Ideation session focusing on shaping funding opportunities for next generation energy innovation. Lastly, we'll be heavily involved with the newly formed strategic development team. With the guidance of Vice Presidents Blasey, Squires, and Katsonis, a strategic development team has been formed to improve institutional synergy through the creation of a new approach to identification, development, and execution of key strategies. And this all through the alignment of research engagement and resource development. Now, the primary goals of this strategic development team will be the development of projects and programs that require contributions from across campus, such as investment-worthy projects and programs that match donor and investor interest with NIU priorities. Largely, these will focus on interdisciplinary opportunities that span departments and colleges, and interinstitutional programs involving multiple units across campus. We'll be playing, as the Office of Innovation, a key role in the integration component of this, and I'll be serving as the team's chair. Last slide, please. I'd like to close by saying that the office is working hard at setting the conditions for long-term innovation viability and success at NIU. Working on engaging the whole of ecosystem, leveraging the innovation engines that NIU has to offer, and we're working hard on building momentum through FY21 to achieve greater innovation impacts in the coming years. At this time, I'll pause and I'd like to welcome your questions. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Luke. That was extremely impressive. Being acknowledged at the way it was extremely impressive. One of the areas I'm interested in is the whole area of commercialization. And I saw that that's going to be one of your focuses for this upcoming period. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Yes, very happy to. So commercialization requires a lot of key components to make happen. I know that there's several entrepreneurs on the call who've been very successful in terms of their work over the years. And they know that to build a business takes a lot of different component pieces and a lot of different disciplines. You might say that it takes a village because a lot of experts have to contribute in some way, shape, or form. So as we're thinking about commercializing NIU technology and taking it to the market space, we really have to identify, one, the market potential of the technology, two, identify the partnerships that would need to be in place to drive that technology to market, and then three, provide the guide rails that will enable that technology to be successful. Lots of component pieces to this. So when I say that we're setting the conditions, we're really building relationships with entities that can help us do just this. And as we think about this, you know, of course, we're not the only ones across the U.S. who have done this before. So we're looking to borrow ideas, partner with others, leverage successes that have worked for other contexts that are similar to ours. You can think of programs like the I-Corps program, which inspires principal investigators to think about business cases for their work. We're going to be borrowing elements of that. We're also going to be partnering with faculty across campus who engage in entrepreneurial teaching and pedagogy to help really inspire the next generation of entrepreneurs so they can see themselves in that lifestyle going forward. We're also going to be spending a lot of time on thinking through what are the use cases for the technology we've already invested in. So NIU has a very robust intellectual property portfolio. There's four folks who are working very closely on it now, but if we think about ways to engage students and engage others across the community, more minds on target will yield potential new use cases for it. So we're actively thinking about crowdsourcing and other ways to leverage, you know, the hive mind of NIU. I hope that answers your question. I'm happy to go into further detail.
No, thank you, Luke. And this is a great report, and the way you're following through on it is a great deal of work. Can you tell me what's the staff in the office?
I'm sorry, would you repeat the question, please? It cut
sure.
out.
Sure. What is the staffing in the Office of Innovation itself?
Thank you. Sure. So there's a total of four of us so far. myself, Corinne Bredberg, who is the Deputy Director for Innovation Partnerships, Mark Hankins, who's the Deputy Director for Tech Transfer, he's our IP lawyer, and Chef Brian Flowers, who focuses on food systems innovation.
That's what I thought, which even makes this more impressive. Thank you. I think we have a question from Trustee Barsima.
Thank you, Chair Athos. Luke, welcome to NIU again. I know you've been here for about 7 months now, during some pretty tenuous times. But when you first came here, you talked about red teaming as a process that you wanted to use. Have you been able to implement that? And if so, how successful has that been? And you might want to explain, in your words, what red teaming is.
Sure. Thank you, Trustee Barsima. Very happy to address that. So just by way of background, red teaming is a discipline that the Defense Department uses in two contexts. First context is in vulnerability assessment, and the second context relates to more fully consideration of alternatives and plans, processes, opportunities. It's a way to pick apart planning and decision making to make it more robust later on, with a specific focus on unintended consequences and opportunities that can be exploited therein. So yes, I have done a bit of this already here in terms of our internal process review. One of the red team principles is critical review. And it's basically trying to take yourself out of the local context and ask very difficult questions. One way that you can engage in this that's a useful tool to employ is the five whys. You just keep asking questions and follow up with why, to really dig at a particular issue and better understand the fundamental root causes and issues inherent. So I have been employing that technique. I also think that one of the other real strong strengths of red teaming is, you know, that idea of bringing into multiple perspectives, as many perspectives as you possibly can, to better, you know, pick up a problem and look at it from multiple angles. Here I'm thinking about our student body, and I'm really excited to get students involved in helping think through use cases for our intellectual property. So we're actively building the constructs for how we would be engaging with students in this and what sorts of learning outcomes we would be able to achieve from this, as well as what sorts of practical outcomes we could do once we learn different use cases that the students would have in mind for the IP. I think this is a really exciting potential opportunity space, both for the students and for our office, in terms of force multiplication of effort.
I love the process, and I wish you luck in being able to implement it even further within your group, and you know, I it's a process that I've used in business for a long time and used it very successfully, so I'm glad to see you doing that. Second question I had, so you know, we have some other labs across campus. You know, the College of Business is building the Creativity and Empathy Lab and so forth. How are you interconnecting from an innovation standpoint with some of the individual creativity labs and such that are being built at the college level?
That's a great question, sir. So there's several different aspects of this that I'm particularly excited about. I mentioned the innovation inventory that we engaged in, and some of that work exposed me to some of these labs and opportunity spaces. Using the Creativity and Empathy Lab as a good example of this, if you view innovation in terms of an equation with a left and right side, where innovation occurs, where there's an inception point where the idea happens, all the way to an impact point where you take that idea and you do something with it. The Creativity and Empathy Lab, in my mind, represents an opportunity on the left side of that equation for inspiration, really picking apart a potential idea and running with it. Bringing multiple different perspectives upon it and shining a bright light on what potential innovations could come of it. If you view that as the early stage of the equation, what are the other linkages we could put in place across campus that would take that idea and then do something with it, put it into fruition? And here I'm thinking in the business school, there's also the Experiential Learning Center that I've been very familiar with, having worked now with one of our startups and engaged directly with them. and I got to see firsthand the power of the student creativity in that space. And then thinking too on other elements across campus, like in the senior design program that Don Peterson, the Dean Don Peterson runs for his engineering students, and the live prototypes that they create, I've been able to generate a lot of interest across my former network in that particular space. So imagine linking these things together and finding ways that they can cross-leverage each other's strengths. And then we can start building out that equation from the left side to the right side. And then talking about the commercialization engine, once those ideas get to a point where we can take them and do something with them, having the levers in place to be able to nurture a potential spin-out that would come up this and locate it in DeKalb would be a great win for us. So that's generally what we're thinking of trying to do.
Well, that's great. And I agree with that process, and I agree with that thinking 100%. Because, you know, the observation that I've had, having been in the College of Business for 10 years and seeing a lot of ideas that germinate there, is that there was no place to kind of graduate them to. They would kind of sit in the College of Business, or they would sit in the College of Engineering, whatever it might be. You know, I'm more intimate with the College of Business just because I was in there, but you know, they didn't have all of the resources needed in order to get it to commercial state. And we as a university were, you know, a little clumsy in our programs years ago, or support in terms of how to help them get that to commercial state. So I love the idea of, you know, let the idea, you know, let it start and grow in the individual college, but then there's a place to graduate that idea to that is more at the university level, where we could help the entrepreneur to actually get that idea or get that product to commercial status. And then, you know, to your point, let's keep it on campus, or let's keep it in.
Thank you very much for your questions.
But that's great. Yeah, no, I'm great to say it's great to see you here, Luke, and good luck in all that you're doing. Thanks very much for your report. That was excellent.
Thank you.
Are there any additional questions? Again, Luke, thank you. Thank you very much. Excellent report. Really appreciated it.
Thank you so much.
So are there any other matters to come before this committee? If not, our next meeting will be November 12th, 2020. Could I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved, Madam Chair. Montel.
Second, Trustee Herrero.
Jessica, could we have a roll call?
Board Chair Dennis Barsima.
Yes.
Trustee Montel Gales.
Yes.
Trustee Veronica Herrero.
Yes.
Trustee Bob Pritchard.
Yes.
Trustee Aiden Shields.
Yes.
Trustee Eric Wasowicz.
Yes.
Committee Vice Chair John Butler.
Yes.
Committee Chair Rita Athes.
Yes. Therefore, this concludes the Research, Innovation, Legal, and Legislative Affairs Committee meeting.